This is crazy. This is absolutely insane. Such at a loss for words. I mean, I'll find them, don't worry.
Do I like playing against adversity? Man, I just like playing, period.
I'm shocked and I'm so proud of our guys, man. Unbelievable.
Putting the crest on every single time means something to me.
Hey guys, it's Charlie Davies bringing you some bonus podcast content to tie you over until our next episode. During the Bend the Curve Stay at Home campaign, U.S. Soccer Classics have been replaying some of its most memorable men's national team, women's national team, and U.S. Open Cup matches, and this one is truly special to me. The final match of World Cup qualifying versus Costa Rica in 2009. We had just qualified for the World Cup 2 days before, one of the best memories moments of my life. It was amazing to watch the full game through, the ninth-minute tribute, and to catch up again with Jonathan Bornstein to talk about that goal he scored and what it meant to me, our team, the entire country of Honduras. Without further ado, here's the pregame chat with myself, Johnny Bornstein, and Adrian Healy.
Welcome in, everyone. Hope everyone is doing well and staying safe here at U.S. Men's National Team Soccer. We thought we would help you stay at home and bend the curve by bringing you another U.S. Men's National Team Classic. And this one is a truly monumental night for anyone who was involved. 14th of October, 2009. I'm Adrian Healy. I'm joined by two of the main protagonists for that night as the U.S. played Costa Rica. Stu Holden, there he is, and Jonathan Bornstein. You guys both doing well, I hope. Yeah. You're looking good.
Yeah, I think one of the beauties of this morning is that you and I haven't caught up in a number of years, actually. So it's great to see your face, first and foremost, and we get to share, you know, some of these wonderful memories together.
Yeah, it's great to be here also. Pleasure to see both of you guys. Never actually met you, Adrian, in person, but it's great to be talking with you. And Stu, it's great to catch up. It's been a really long time, and I missed it, man.
Well, now I get to cover your games in MLS, and if you mess, the good thing is if you mess up, now I get to talk about you on air. So no pressure,
brother.
Of course.
So, guys, just to frame this, let's take us back to 2009, because for me, that was a massive year for the game in this country. It was a year where the game really kind of, it's almost like a tipping point for me, that our coverage of the game, I saw evolve hugely from an MLS perspective. The Sounders came into the league. There were massive crowds for international friendlies that summer. And for the national team, what a year it was. So just lead us up to the final pair of qualifiers, if you will. Take us through 2009 from your perspective, Stu.
Yeah, I mine will be a little bit different than Borny's, because I actually made my debut in 2009 with the national team, and it started with the Gold Cup. So, you know, I was called into the January camp early in that year, was trying to work my way into the team to be a part of that World Cup the following year should we qualify. So, you know, I wasn't a part of the Confederations Cup, that wonderful run that the team had there, and almost got my opportunity off the back of that. And had a good Gold Cup. We lost in the final to Mexico. I don't want to get into that game right now. Hopefully we're not doing a look back at that 5-0.
Let's not talk about that one.
you know, and then that
my
led
last
into
game
the,
with the national team.
Yeah,
actually.
Was it? Oh, was it really? Wow.
Yeah.
And then that led into, you know, the qualifiers after that. We played Mexico down in Mexico. We had a couple more. And then the game against Honduras that led into this game right. against Costa Rica that really was the important one. I'll never forget that game. I know we're going to talk a little bit more yeah. about that, Adrian. But that atmosphere and all the emotion in that one away from home in a CONCACAF game to actually qualify for the World Cup, allowing us to have this, you know, wonderful moment that we did back in D.C. with the game against Costa Rica.
And before we get to Honduras, Jonathan, your reflections on that year, the whole hex was played in 2009. It started with another 2-0 against Mexico. And then, of course, the Confederations Cup run that everyone remembers so fondly.
Yeah, those memories are all amazing. That year was a blowout year for myself, for the team. I think as a group, we really came together and kind of set things up for us to go into a World Cup extremely ready to compete and do well. Obviously the Confederations Cup was a dream, obviously beating Spain the way we did off the run that they were having. It was just, no one expected us to do that. And I think it talks a lot about the heart and the passion that the team had to always stick through every game. And obviously that goes into what happened against Costa Rica also, you know, never put our arms down and just fight to the very last minute.
Mm. So. Yeah, amazing stuff. Seeing you get all the way to the final, Brazil, and go 2-0 up against Brazil as well. And an epic, never to be forgotten. And then you had to come back from that, and as Stewie mentioned, the Gold Cup. And then after that, a resumption of the Hex. And it had been an interesting qualifying campaign, hasn't it? Because you'd been brilliant at home, but there'd been some bumpy patches away from home. You'd lost in Costa Rica down in June, just before the Confederations Cup. I think you had to come from 2-0 down to get a 2-2 draw against El Salvador, if memory serves. But the points you got at home led up to this final pair of qualifiers. You're facing Honduras away, and then Costa Rica at home. You still have qualifying in your own hands. Just take us in to the U.S. camp on the way down to Honduras, knowing, I think you knew at that point, did you not, that a win there would put you in?
Yeah, I think one of the things we always seem to forget every time we go through a qualifying cycle, and even in the present day, is that there's an expectation that it's kind of a cakewalk in some respects. Like, it's U.S., it's Mexico, it's Costa Rica, these teams are going to qualify. You always forget some of these journeys and how difficult it was, and that we hadn't qualified even down to the last two games of that cycle. So heading down to Honduras, I just remember it almost being declared a national holiday down there, because for them, had they beaten us, they would have gone to the World Cup. I think instead, well, they would have qualified for the World Cup. So I don't know about you, Borny, but I just remember the anticipation down there in Honduras, how it was built up in the national press. There was just this energy, this buzz, this excitement. And then walking into the stadium, you know, when we get there, I think 2 hours before, 2.5 hours, the entire stadium was packed. And it was just bouncing. You know, there was loud hissing. There was booing. There was, you know, this, I remember this big laser pointer, this big green light was like being shined in people's eyes. Like, I have a picture of Clint, I think, on the field with this like big green patch on his face. And just remembering, like, man, this is going to be a tough game, a terrible field, bumpy field. Like, that was like the energy that people talk about, these away games in CONCACAF, like not really knowing what to expect until you get down there. And for me, that was my first experience of that. And I was starting in that game thinking, oh man, this is going to be a tough game today.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can add to that. I remember also walking into the stadium to go check out the field before the game. And normally you walk in and the stadium's empty. People are arriving here and there, but no, that place was completely filled to the rim. It's a big stadium, you know, it's their Olympic stadium, and so they have even a track around the field, but it felt so close. Like, all the fans were like right on top of us because of how loud they were. It definitely was the first time I had experienced something like that up to that point in my career. Also, you know, you're dealing with so many different conditions. The weather there is not easy to play in, like Sue said, the field. Obviously their fans played a big role in the game. But I think we came into that game thinking, oh, if we win this game, we're going to qualify for the World Cup. So let's do everything in our power. Let's push out the other circumstances that are around us. And I think in the end of it, you know, we come out with the win. It was a really intense game. But that celebration after the game is the only thing I truly remember. We get it.
take us inside that locker room.
Well, quickly, before that, though, Adrian, you know, in that game, I remember this game actually being hard to find on broadcast. I don't think it was on broadcast television back in the U.S. And so I don't know how many people watch it. I think people are watching it on illegal streams or going to bars. And it was actually a good thing for me, because in that game, I gave away a penalty when we were up 2-1. And Carlos Pavon was going to take it. And I just remember thinking, you know, maybe the 85th minute, like, please don't score. Please don't score.
Right.
Because Landon had, you know, had a game that day. And, you know, and Connor Casey, I think that he scored two goals. One was a header. And then Landon had that free kick that I think iced it. But Pavon missed the penalty. And I just remember thinking, okay, it's not going to be my fault. We're not going to a World Cup now. Like, I just get to the locker room. And, you know, once we got there into that locker room, there's these epic pictures of, you know, guys just sliding around and partying and champagne. And I think there's a, I'm going to try and find it here for you, Barney, but there was a shot where I think I'm the only one with my shirt. I'm the only one with my shirt on for
a change. On, yeah.
But there was that big slide right there in the middle. You can see this kind of like
it
was a mat, and we champagned it up, and guys were doing belly slides and chanting, like, you know, the Olays, and we're going to the World Cup. It was
going to the cup.
Yeah, we're going to the cup. I mean, to your point, Borny, I don't really remember much about the game other than the penalty and then the celebrations in the locker room after. It's just, you know, pandemonium at that point.
And is it right that the fans after that game in Honduras were saying, okay, you guys have done it, now go beat Costa Rica for us? That was kind of, there was no hostility towards the U.S. players, is that right?
Yeah, that was kind of the buzz from outside the locker room. Obviously, they still knew that they had a chance to make it. They're thinking probably, yo, U.S., go into the next game, get the win, you'll secure it for us. And obviously, that's kind of what happened in the end, but we'll get there.
Sure. Well, what about that plane ride back from Honduras, Stewie? Because you guys have done it, job mission accomplished. Was that the spirit on the plane? You knew still had this game against Costa Rica to go.
Yeah, this is peak Bob Bradley, Adrian. It's like, you know, we're on the plane. You know, a couple beers are out and like guys are playing cards and relaxed and just this incredible flow and this energy and, you know, music's up and blasting. And I just remember Bob kind of turning around, like giving his just this like look of like, how dare there be partying right now to this level, because we still have one more game. And we're like, Bob, we qualified for the World Cup, you know, and Bob is just still was just focused on like, hey, guys, you know, we owe it to the competition that we take this last game seriously. We want to win every game. It's in front of our home fans. Like, the job's not done yet. So he still let you enjoy it, but there was still this like feeling of, hey, you know, maybe just one beer instead of 16, Jay DeMeritt, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I will say that talks about the mentality of the team that, you know, we had going in with Bob Bradley. We, as players, we wanted to enjoy every moment. We wanted to celebrate that we had already qualified for the World Cup. You know, it's easy for us to lose focus on what's ahead of us, even though, you know, we still have one more game and we don't want to be embarrassed or anything. So I think that was a good thing of Bob to be able to keep us in line, because we could have got out of control easily as players. But it's a good thing for the team.
And clearly the message was that he still desperately wanted to finish number one, top of the hex, didn't he, above Mexico. So he felt that was going to be the carrot for you guys going into Costa Rica.
Yeah, because if you qualify first in the group, you obviously take on maybe a better position in the World Cup. You know, you get grouped better. So I think those are very important keys to qualifying first in the group.
So then you land in DC. The game is Wednesday night. I have to give you a little background here. For ESPN, we had really made this a big, big deal. It was a full blowout coverage. It was almost like a dry run for the World Cup. There were upper level executives involved, producers who don't normally have anything to do with soccer were there. So it was a big, big deal. And I have to tell you, there was almost in TV land a little bit of a sense of deflation that you guys had already qualified, because we wanted to have it on our air, you beating Costa Rica to qualify at RFK. That would have been a ratings bonanza. But we were like, okay, it's still going to be fantastic. We're going to make the most. So of course, we couldn't have predicted what was to come, which was something completely unthinkable. And of course, I'm talking about Charlie Davies and what transpired. Stewie, take us through those couple of days leading up to the game. I know you were Charlie's roommate, so you probably
I actually, if you couldn't even see it, but I have goosebumps right now, honestly. Like, kind of get the shivers as you're teeing that up. A, from a TV perspective, because, you know, now being on this side, Adrian, but also, you know, Charlie first and foremost is one of my best friends, and he was my roommate. We'd been close for a number of years. We've been on the U-20s together, and, you know, he was really emerging into this rising star in U.S. soccer. And, you know, the accident that he had in D.C. that left him being airlifted to the hospital. Look at this guy. Guys, yes.
What's going on, guys?
Hey,
okay. Charlie, Charlie, can you go to, like, the regular thing here? Because you look like a ghost on my screen.
mine also. I thought it was we had to guess who the guest
ghost
was.
The ghost of Charlie Davies is here.
I love that.
Oh, my gosh. Oh,
wow.
It's, like, scary.
Popping around with number nines around me.
Well, welcome, Charlie. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having the ghost of Charlie. Come on.
Hope you're doing well, man. Stewie was just talking us through the couple of days leading up to this game we're going to be showing at the top of the hour, the Costa Rica game. Stewie, carry on.
Yeah, well, it's going to be weird talking about Charlie right now when he's here, but oh, there he is. The real Charlie's here. Yeah. Well, that was kind of eerie the way you came in. No, just, you know, when that accident happened, and Charlie and I have talked about this so many times post, actually took a couple of years to really just go through the timeline of how it all happened. But it was a real shock. I received a call in the hotel room and had to bring it to our team administrator, Pam, and took it to the team. And Bob held this team meeting, kind of filling the team in, because he wanted to make sure, once he knew the facts of what was going on, that one of our brothers was in a life-threatening condition. And I think that, Borny, I'd be interested from your perspective and just knowing the rest of the team, but you know, I'd had a little bit longer to process this because I was like dealing with the immediacy of it and with Charlie. And it's a feeling I will never forget that I can't even really put into words, of just, you know, how your stomach just drops instantly and the whole mood deflates. And really, you know, nothing is important anymore beyond Charlie's health. And I think that was even the conversation of like, can we play this game? And you know, Bob was like, we owe it to Charlie to do that, but not in the immediate aftermath. It was like, hey guys, we're still figuring this out. And, you know, we're going to talk about this as we go through. But that team meeting was such a, you know, it was so silent and so, you know, and people were crying. I remember Josie crying and a number of the guys just really trying to process and come to, you know, to grips with what was actually happening.
Boy. Yeah. From my end, I remember coming down for the, it was basically to come down for the team meal. And I just saw people's faces, very somber. A lot of people kind of inquisitive as to, like, what's going on? No one, I mean, some people knew what happened, like Stu, but personally, I had no idea what was going to be said. And so when we sat down in the meeting and Bob started to talk about what happened with Charlie and the accident, and really didn't have all the answers, but I remember just being taken aback and getting this, like, even when I think about it now, I get this feeling in my stomach where I'm just like, I can't believe something like this happened to one of our brothers and one of our teammates, someone who we spent so much time with on a daily basis. And, you know, now he was fighting for his life. And so for me, you know, I didn't even know how to process it in the moment. I remember a lot of people crying, a lot of sadness. And so we left that meeting just kind of not knowing what to think. It was very quiet in the team meal. People kind of talking about, well, what, you know, what could happen, what happened. And so for me, that's kind of what happened. And, you know, I thought about it the entire game. I still think about it now. Even when I spoke with Charlie in New England, you know, we comment about it. And so, you know, it was a life changer for all of us, but I think we've come out of it a lot stronger, all of us, in the end.
Well, Charlie, you now get to talk about the game for a little.
Yeah.
And congratulations, by the way. You're doing fantastic.
Thank you.
So how do you now manage to talk about this period of time?
I look back at it, you know, I'm at a different place in my life. And when I look back, I'm really proud and appreciative of the time I got to spend on the field with my brothers. You know, they become a family. And 2 days prior to that car accident, we just qualified for the World Cup in Honduras. And that is the greatest moment of my career, is that moment we got to not, it wasn't the goal at Azteca, it wasn't scoring in Confederations Cup, it was that moment celebrating with everybody in the locker room. And, you know, you are one step closer to everyone's ultimate dream once we sign up to do this as a profession, which is playing a World Cup to represent your country. For 2 days later to be completely upside down, and, you know, for these guys to go out not knowing the uncertainty of my well-being, you know, and having to process that, to still go out on the pitch and get a result, to finish the job and finish the top of the group in CONCACAF is so impressive. Wow. And, you know, I'm so fortunate to have these guys be, you know, my close friends, and they'll always be considered family to me.
And I believe, Charlie, that you've never actually watched the game against Costa Rica back yet up to this point. Am I right?
I've never watched the game. Of course, I've seen highlights. And of course, I saw what the fans did, the tribute with the number nines, because my family were able to save me a bunch of the number nines from that game, and all the fan mail and everything that the supporters were able to give me to inspire me. And that moment, although I didn't see it live, was able to push me through all those difficult times during rehab. And it empowered me, it motivated me, inspired me. So I'm forever grateful for the supporters.
Well, and I hope you're going to watch it with us starting at the top.
I am. Game, right? I cannot wait. I'm excited. But
spoiler alert, don't turn off in the 94th minute.
I won't.
So guys, Stu and Johnny, knowing what had happened, how did that then sort of affect the 24 hours leading into the game and the preparation? I remember being at training the night before at RFK, and several of you guys were in tears coming off that.
Yeah, it was impossible to focus. You just couldn't. It consumed every minute of every day. And I think every player was trying to, kept asking Bob and saying, when can we go see Charlie? Can we go visit him at the hospital? But, Charlie was in intensive care for, I think, a week, 2 weeks, Charlie, at least. Wasn't conscious, wasn't allowed visitors, only family. His family were even having trouble to get out to see him. And, I just remember nothing mattered. I mean, training was like a fraction of the energy and still people paid attention and Bob tried to get everybody going. But even in the lead up, one of the things you can watch for in this game is, if you watch the behind the scenes of this game, I mean, Josie multiple times is pictured just kind of rubbing his eyes and holding back the tears. I'm in this, this weird trance. And it was actually an interesting game because I was at the end of my contract with the Dynamo and I was about to go overseas. And I had, I think, six or seven teams from the UK that were watching me. And I played terribly in this game, honestly. I was horrific. I think I had one good cross to Josie, which thankfully they showed in the highlights. But I just had a real hard time even getting myself in a zone and a place to focus. And I know Charlie's saying the way that the guys went out, there was that spirit that Johnny talked about. I wouldn't say we played great that day. I wouldn't say I could even pick out a guy that had a good game that day beyond Johnny Bornstein in the 95th minute, with the header. But it was just such a weird game that I hope, and I never had to experience that again in my playing career, that I hope I never have to deal with from a broadcasting side, because you're dealing with life and death in that sense. And the sport at that moment just felt so secondary.
Johnny, it is interesting watching back the game because you guys actually started pretty well. And in the ninth minute, of course, all the Sam's Army held up the big number nine for Charlie. And that seemed to provide a spur early on in that game. I remember there was a couple of chances. Connor Casey might have scored. Josie Altidore, I think, had a chance. Mm-hmm. So it was clearly some energy from the crowd you guys were feeding off as well with Charlie. And
yeah, if I go back even before the game, I would say – in the locker room, a lot of people, normally you're listening to your music, you're getting ready for the game, you're pumping each other up. It wasn't like that game. I think there were a lot of nerves going around the team, a lot of uncertainty with what was going on with Charlie. All of us just trying to stay focused. I remember guys saying, come on, guys, let's concentrate, let's focus, let's do this for Charlie. And even Bob says that in the pregame speech. He said, let's do this for one of our brothers who's fighting for his life. We can at least go out there and fight on the field. I do remember us starting the game well, like you said, with a few chances. But then, we give up two very quick goals. And at that point, you're like, wow, what's going to happen? But I think the team showed a lot of heart. And we kept fighting. We finished the half well. I think nobody did play extremely well that game. But I think it was because of those nerves and wanting to do so much for someone who wasn't even there with us. But in general, I think the fans did an amazing job honoring Charlie in the ninth minute. I saw all those numbers go up and we were attacking that goal, so it was completely covered with the number nine, and I just remember thinking in the moment, okay, we're gonna do it for him no matter what it takes.
And Stewie, you're playing a Costa Rica team fighting for their World Cup place. So they needed a result, and you find yourselves 2-0 down, two Brian Ruiz goals at halftime. What's that halftime locker room like, if you can remember?
I remember Bob's speeches, and the guys will talk about this team. Charlie will talk about it with the Confederations Cup, with just this theme over the course of Bob Bradley teams, that there's never a sense of panic, there's never a sense that this game is over. And even when when playing poorly, there's an ability to get results. I mean, that showed in the World Cup, you know, the way that the team would fight back against Slovenia, against Algeria. You know, we could all probably list off five games right off the top of our heads where we could say this team was never out of it. There was an incredible leadership. There was incredible belief. There was incredible amounts of talent as well. And I think, you know, like Bob said, he had a perfect line, you know, saying, whoever gets the next goal is going to win this game. So make sure it's you guys.
Right.
And yep. That was our mentality. Like, hey, we're down 2-0, but let's get the next goal. And then you're going to feel Costa Rica now start to get super nervous because this is their World Cup berth at stake as well. And that's what this team fed on. That's what this crowd fed on well on a night that was so emotional already. We did owe it to Charlie and to ourselves to – hey, let's not go down in the last game and let this be a negative note heading into the World Cup. Let's go out there. Let's finish this cycle strong. Let's finish first in the hex. And, you know, that's what we did, thankfully.
Well, you did get the next goal. Michael Bradley scrambling home a rebound, 2-1 in like the 72nd minute. And then it was banging on the door, nothing doing into stoppage time, still down 2-1. It's interesting watching back the highlights because at 2-1 down, I think Costa Rica had a break, like a 2-on-1 or even a 3-on-1 break, where they could have killed it off, but they took it into the corner flag instead. And I think it was Jose Torres who ran all the way back and made a tackle and started a last-ditch counterattack that ultimately led to one more corner for the U.S. And what a corner it proved to be. Jonathan, I think you need to talk us through the 95th minute at RFK.
And before you get to it,
I'll
Borny,
take it back to that.
I want to ask who was not marking? Who did you pay not to mark you on that
floor? Oh, the entire Tico team, you know? I'll take it even back further than that because the moment that, for me that was very pivotal was when Oguchi Onyewu got injured.
Right,
Yeah, because he's normally a guy who goes into all set pieces, all corner kicks, and I'm normally the guy who stays back and kind of is back for whatever kind of counterattack that can take place. So when he got injured, not only did we lose a man because of the injury, but we had already made the three subs. So we didn't get to sub in anybody. So in the last minutes of the game, I was finding myself going up on corner kicks, challenging for balls. And before that Torres play, there's a play in the game where I actually challenge with the goalkeeper and he punches it out.
Yeah,
and that play leads to where Torres has to track all the way back in my position. And then he wins the ball, dribbles it up the field, switches it over to Michael Bradley. Michael Bradley does a great cut on the player, hits it over to Donovan. Donovan swings a cross in, and we win a corner kick. And then that's in the 95th minute when all the magic happened.
And Robbie Rogers.
It was magical indeed.
Go on. Yeah, it was. Charlie.
And so,
such a great moment.
I have goosebumps. I wasn't there, and I've only seen it on replay, but I have goosebumps anytime someone brings up that match and that goal and seeing how you guys celebrated after. I was, you know, unconscious in the hospital, but at the time, you know, to see how you guys could come together. And you could see the love, the belief, everything was there. And then, you know, I have images stuck in my brain of, you know, Josie lifting up his shirt and having, you know, my name with the number on his t-shirt and like pounding his chest and you guys all just celebrating being top of CONCACAF. That just brought me so much joy. And I was overwhelmed to the fullest just thinking about what you guys were able to accomplish on such a, you know, trying, devastating night.
But weeks later, though, right, Charlie? I mean, you did. If I remember correctly, you were barely awake, and people were telling you kind of the score of the game, or you know, your memories of that you didn't really process until later, right?
Probably not till 2-3 weeks later. Probably 3 weeks. And the reason why I couldn't watch the game was it was too painful for me. I felt like I let you guys down. I let the coaches down. I let the staff down. I let my family down. I let all the fans and supporters down. So I couldn't bring myself to watch it. And every U.S. national team game since, I've watched, and it's been painful, so painful to me, because my whole career after that was devoted to trying to make it up to not only you guys, to try and join you guys on the field, but to show like you guys mean the world to me. The supporters mean the world to me, and I want to make it up to you. And that's kind of been my the rest of my career was lived that way.
Well, we're gonna run this game in just a minute or two. Jonathan, I haven't able to let you describe that moment. Yeah, I failed to describe it as a commentator, and I have to say, I wasn't expecting to see Bornstein pop up with the header, and I think I was actually, it was one of those moments you dread as a commentator. We're not sure who has scored until the celebration starts, so just talk us through it as Robbie Rogers swung in that cross.
Yeah, so Robbie Rogers swings in the cross, the corner kick. Like I said, I was going into the box because it was late in the game, and I figured, you know, why not? It's we can't lose any worse. Only it can help. So I just ran into the box. They didn't even expect me to be involved in the play, and so I found myself extremely open. I just like a channel that was leading exactly where the ball was going to be going, and so I just connected with the ball with the head. There were a few of their players standing in front of the goal. Once I made contact, I was just like, get through that group of players at the goal line, and it squeaked through. Saw it hit the back of the net, and then I just took off running, hoping that guys could catch me, and then we could all celebrate together in the corner.
And you've never had to buy dinner in Honduras or drinks since, Johnny, is that right?
This is true.
Do they have a statue of you yet?
Not that I've seen, but hopefully one day.
Yeah, right. I mean, he was talking about the Honduran Olympic Stadium earlier. He was like, you know, down the corner from my vacation property they gave me, and, you know, next to the bar that I get free drinks. Like, you seem to know that a little too well, Borny.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it's amazing. Even to this day, I get, you know, Facebook messages, Instagram posts about that day. Honduran fans still saying thank you very much. You know, that's their best. Their most celebrated goal in the history, and it's really nice to see that kind of stuff still happening today.
Right.
I would have never imagined something like scoring a goal for my national team could affect a whole other country, and you know, it was amazing. I still get chills to today.
Yeah, I think I remember reading, Borny, that when your goal went in, there was like an earthquake type Richter ripple in Honduras. No, seriously, I think I remember there was like this explosion of energy and excitement and cheering when you went in. It's pretty cool to think about. Like, you don't think about those moments when you're in the game and the effect it has outside of that, because Barney's not going up for that header thinking, I need to get Honduras in the World Cup here, you know.
And I hear Johnny, you auctioned the boots off that you were wearing that night a little later for to aid Haiti, is that right?
Yeah, we when the earthquakes happened in Haiti, we actually decided to help out, and we figured we'll donate those boots, and it was a good cause.
Yeah,
and I was glad to see that someone could pick those up and we could help out in any way we could.
So Charlie, just because we're going to get to the game right now, so much to draw. I can't wait for you to see it.
Yes.
But just in final thoughts, what do you think the legacy, Charlie, of this particular era of the U.S. men's national team, let's say under Bob Bradley from 07 through to 2011, which of course you were such a big part of, what's the legacy of that team looking back a decade on now?
Well, I think when you think of a national team and what it means to a group of men, that is the definition of a family, of a team. That is a team. The way we went out and approached games, the way we competed, how we stuck to game plans. Bob was such a mastermind when it came to being technically sound, having everyone understand their roles. And he was extremely supportive to me after the accident and pushed me to get back on the pitch. So when I think of this team, I think of just heart. This is a team that had skill, but also had the heart and the motivation, the tenacity to grind out results as well as beat teams with finesse and skill. So it's a team that's all I think is going to have a lasting legacy, because this is a squad that obviously did well in a World Cup, but also in a Confederations Cup, got to a FIFA Cup final and nearly hoisted a trophy, beating Brazil in the final. So
did you score that day?
No, I didn't score that day. I wish I did, but Landon and Clint had the goals.
Sorry. Did you have a wonderful assist that day?
I may have had a wonderful assist.
Guys, you were a great team to watch. Final thoughts, Stewie and Johnny, on that era?
I think for me, you know, these are some of the brightest moments and most memorable moments of my career. You know, my career was cut short as well. It was a couple of years later because of injury. And I look back on these days and, you know, representing the national team, there's no greater honor. And these are the nights that I will be telling my kids about for years and years to come. I'll be pulling up the grainy YouTube fitted footage and showing them these broadcasts and saying, yeah, you see that guy in there, that number 7, that was your dad. Because, you know, this is what we work our career for. And I think to be able to relive these together, these moments, to think back on that, it's something we'll always have. And like Charlie said, this family that we had created, and thanks to Bob's leadership, but the wonderful teammates and friends and family that I've got because of that, it's these are all wonderful things for me to look back on.
Final thoughts, Johnny?
You know, I'm in a little bit of a different boat than these guys because I'm still playing, and right, I feel very fortunate to be playing. But the moment that we created from the national team during that time will stick with me forever. I'll piggyback off what Charlie said. We definitely created a family that will never be able to take away from any of us. You know, I wish we would have done better in the World Cup. It ended in a way that we were all very disappointed losing to Ghana that way. But in general, I'm extremely happy that I got to experience the memories with these guys, and I'll never forget them. It's really hard to describe those times because they were so great. But like Stu said, I'll be able to share them with my family, with my wife and my two little girls when they're older, and they'll be screaming goal because that's what they scream now. They say, "Poppy's going to goal for practice." And then so we'll definitely enjoy, and I'm happy that I was able to be part of this group.
Guys, thank you ever, ever so much. 14th of October, 2009. Simply, no one who was ever there or a part of it can ever forget it. Charlie, thank you so much for being a special surprise guest. Best of luck.
No, thanks for having me.
In your future Charlie broadcasting endeavors. You're doing great, man. Keep it up. Stewie and Johnny, great stuff.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the U.S. Soccer Podcast. On behalf of my co-host, Jordan Angeli, this is Charlie Davies. Keep coming back for more episodes, more interviews, and more bonus content. And be sure to download, share, and subscribe. Play on!